Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
So let's be stronger together, my fellow Americans.
And we will make America great again.
There has never been a presidential election quite like this one. Two candidates with starkly different views of the world, from starkly different backgrounds, both with negative approval ratings that are unprecedented for a presidential election, and both with a cadre of enthusiastic supporters who think their candidate has been unfairly maligned by the other party. After a week of tumultuous events, Hillary Clinton has regained her lead over Donald Trump in the national polls, with the feeling that anything can happen between now and Election Day. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guests today on Route 51 are two North Central Wisconsin residents who served as delegates to the just-completed national political conventions. Joining us by phone from Madison, Christine Bremer-Moogley, who served as a superdelegate to the Democratic Party convention in Philadelphia. She is an attorney from Wausau. And joining us by phone from Hayward, Jim Miller, who served as a delegate to the Republican convention in Cleveland. He is also the chair of the 7th Congressional District Republican Party of Wisconsin. And as always, we invite you to join the conversation. You can give us a call toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to our guests live, that's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it live on the air. Jim Miller, Christine Bremer-Moogley, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good morning.
Thank you, Glenn.
Jim, let's start with you. Your reaction to the Republican Party convention, what were the highlights for you?
The highlights, obviously, for me, I think the Trump children really shined. They're a good example of what Donald Trump has done as a family man, as a father, anyways, and talking about some of his business accolades. And also, I think Rudy Giuliani gave a pretty fiery speech, so that was a bit of a highlight for me personally.
How significant is it for you that Trump is now the only so-called outsider in the presidential race?
Well, considering where we were back the first part of the year with, I think we had a 17 in the field and some pretty strong Republican candidates, the fact that he's at this point, that he's the nominee, and he's essentially neck and neck with Hillary Clinton, who's ran for this position, you know, several years back and has wanted it for so many years. I think that's pretty significant that, yeah, he's basically outsider, you know, didn't have a lot of money, certainly doesn't have the endorsements. That's kind of a hot topic nowadays, is endorsements. For him to be at this point, at this stage of the game, is pretty significant.
And Christine, let's go to you. Your reaction to the Democratic Party convention, what were the highlights for you?
Well, it was an amazing week in Philadelphia, and there were so many highlights, it's hard to outline just one. But I think that when you have the leaders of our country all coming together on a stage to address not only the delegates but the whole nation, I mean, I think President Obama's speech, Michelle Obama's speech, and, of course, Hillary's closing with the zillion balloons coming down with the confetti raining on us and our cheese heads. I mean, I can't think of anything that was more important to us than hearing from them and hearing those speeches and hearing Hillary really address the platform of our party and in a very meaningful way. So for us, coming together, standing united after we had a difficult primary season for us, and really coming together, I thought it was all of that together combined was great. And I have to say, Glenn, that most of the delegates, we worked tirelessly with no sleep for all those days, and many of us come home sick, bruised, but ready to fight, and so it was a great week.
How significant is it for you that Hillary Clinton could be the first woman president?
Well, you know, it's hard to underplay that to us. You know, there were many women that were delegates, and many of my friends were there who had fought hard for Barack Obama and for Hillary together. We had been on different sides. And I can't tell you how meaningful it is to us to finally recognize the excellence of this woman and her talents. And, you know, it was to hear her story again at the end of the convention where we got the film was really important. I actually had a friend of mine who was a director of special ed in one of the central Wisconsin schools who came up to me after the convention and said, you know, after all these years, I'm ashamed to say I didn't know Hillary was such a fighter for children with special needs. And when you hear stories like that from people that you think maybe would know you realize how important this convention was to let people understand who Hillary Clinton really is and what she stands for.
It appears that Secretary Clinton has gotten a bump. According to Fox News, she now leads nationally by 10 points, 49-39. CNN, in a two-way race, has Clinton over Trump 52-43%. That's 11 points. In a four-way race, Clinton leads Trump 45-37%, with Libertarian Gary Johnson at 9% and the Green Party's Jill Stein at about 5%. And we have some new battleground polls out this morning, which show Clinton with a significant lead in Pennsylvania. That's 11 points. In Michigan, 9 points, and 15 points in New Hampshire. Jim Miller, do you trust those polls? And if you do, can Trump turn this thing around between now and Election Day?
Well, I mean, the polls are obviously a snapshot, and if we would have been calling in last week, we would have seen the reverse. There was polls that had Trump up by 7 or 8 points, and then, you know, Clinton had her, they had the Democrat convention, and she got a bounce. And Trump has had a bad week this week, so it's early. And even if you look at the national polls, really what you have to do is dissect the state-by-state polls and look at the crosstabs of these key battleground states. So there's a lot of polls out there, a lot of information, but it's early at this point. And if I can make another point, I guess, about the first, you know, the hype of Hillary being the first, possibly the first woman president, it kind of, as a Republican, kind of angers us a little bit. There's a little bit of disingenuousness there, because we had a great candidate. We had a very diverse field in our primary, including several minority candidates and Carly Fiorina. And we really didn't see the Democrats rally around our female candidate, who could potentially also be the first female president, or likewise Sarah Palin, who actually does have a special needs child. But it seems like the litmus test is, are you a liberal female candidate, not necessarily are you a female candidate. So,
well, I'd like to respond to that, Glenn, if I could. I mean, I think that's very oversimplified. We don't vote on the basis of gender. The fact that we have an excellent candidate who happens to be a woman is important to us. The two candidates that you outlined, Sarah Palin and Carly Fiorina, were just unqualified. So, you know, when we have someone who is supremely qualified, it makes a big difference.
Jim Miller.
I guess it depends on your perspective of what's qualified. The qualification for the Democrats is the person a progressive liberal, but they're not really touting that. They're touting that she's a woman. That's her qualification. We like to kind of strip back and not put people in pockets of based by gender and race necessarily. We like to try to base people on their qualifications. And if that's the litmus test, then I agree with them. But it doesn't seem to be that that's the case right now.
Well, both of these candidates have strongly unfavorable ratings at historic levels. In late May, both were at around 45% of registered voters. So I'd like you both to comment on that. First, you, Jim Miller, why do you think Donald Trump's unfavorables are so high?
Well, I think most politicians come in there. It's a very toxic environment. We're surrounded by a 24/7 news cycle. We have social media nowadays. The environment and just the dialogue just gets to be toxic, and it just drains on anybody who wants to put their name in the hat to become a politician. And unfortunately, I think it drives a lot of really good qualified candidates out or keeps them out, because they just don't want to jump into that whole system. So it doesn't really surprise me at this state in the game that anybody who gets to this level is going to have high negatives.
And Christine, why do you think Hillary Clinton's negatives are so high?
Well, Jim, I agree with you. A lot of people stay out because the environment is so toxic. You're absolutely right about that. And that toxic environment is what's plagued Hillary Clinton for the whole time she's been in public service. I mean, if you look back on what she's been through when she was first lady, going through the present time, there was never a chance for her to show forward what she was doing for children and what she was doing for the people of this country when she was first lady, because she was addressing many, many scandals due to the toxicity of the environment. So I think that when you realize that this woman has been in public life that long and had that many attacks on her character and her personality and her husband and everything else, there's a reason why there are these low levels. But I think that the convention went a long way to informing people as to who she really was. Unfortunately for Donald Trump, he's doing it out of his own mouth, telling people who he really is, and his poll numbers are just dropping to the bottom like a rock.
What is the role of the two third-party candidates, I guess you'd say the third and fourth-party candidates, Libertarian Gary Johnson polling about 10% which means they may have to include him in the debates, and then Jill Stein of the Green Party, about 5%. Could they sway the election? And Christine, are you worried about Jill Stein taking some of those Bernie Sanders supporters? She's certainly advertising a lot on cable television right now.
Right, I saw her ad last night. I was surprised at it. You know, I think that if we look back at the Gore Bush election when Ralph Nader was also running, I think Ralph Nader's impact in the Green Party did have an effect. And I think most of the people that supported Bernie Sanders don't want that to happen again. I heard that over and over and over at the convention, that we understand that this is not the candidate of our first choice, but we are first progressives, and we understand that Donald Trump is a danger to our nation. We are not going to do anything to make it easier for him to win. So I'm not worried about that. I think if you look back, Glenn, at 2008, when I was a delegate to the convention, Hillary Clinton was only 69 delegates apart from Barack Obama. It was a very close election. This one wasn't that close at all. And yet, and at that time, there were about 29% of the Hillary supporters said they would never vote for Barack Obama. That number is much lower now, under 20% already for Bernie Sanders, and I think most of those people will come along. Obviously, there will be people that don't want to and support Jill Stein, and that's fine, but I really don't believe that people wholeheartedly will go for a third party to, in some way, make it easier for Donald Trump to become our president. That is just too dangerous for our nation.
Jim Miller, you worried that Gary Johnson pulling about 10% might make it easier for Hillary Clinton to be president?
Well, I think it's always on the back of our mind. And you know, Christine mentioned Ralph Nader, but we also have to throw Ross Perot in the mix as well, who essentially took George Bush's second term away and gave us Bill Clinton. So there's always a threat. I mean, if that's a democratic process, and it's good that we don't have necessarily a two-party system, that anybody can jump in and put their name in the hat. But at the end of the day, the Democrat Party and the Republican Party have the massive amount of infrastructure and the database and the people on the ground to win the elections. And these third-party candidates, generally, they just don't have it at this point. They don't have the infrastructure in place to really mount a credible campaign.
Jim Miller, and I'm going to focus on the Republicans right now for a couple of minutes because of everything that's been in the news. I want your take on this. How much turmoil is the Trump campaign in right now? I ask this because until, I guess, just a few minutes ago, he refused to endorse Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. He's been criticized for accepting a veteran's Purple Heart and saying he always wanted one, even though he didn't serve. There was a widely publicized incident where he asked a woman with a crying baby to leave the auditorium after telling her she could stay. There was a four-day back and forth between Mr. Trump and the Muslim American parents of a slain soldier, and that was after he publicly asked the Russians to hack Mrs. Clinton's emails. There are published reports that top party leaders, including Reince Priebus, are furious for him. And Governor Walker, Senator Ron Johnson, and Paul Ryan have all decided not to attend his appearance this Friday in Green Bay. Is this campaign imploding, which is what you hear in the media, or all of these stories merely the creation of the media?
Well, I think it's a fascination of the media. If we look back to June of last year when Trump jumped in, how many points, it seems like on a weekly basis, that the pundits said, is this going to be the end of Donald Trump? Is he going to implode? Because he would say a certain statement, and it would be shocking, and he would suck the oxygen out of the room with something he said. And they said, well, he's never going to pass the 20% threshold, never going to pass the 30% threshold. And he's outperformed every time. It's amazing, really. He's a totally new type of candidate in that regard. Almost like he's got Teflon on, that he can deflect these things. It shocks me. I think it shocks the people in the press. Certainly shocks the Democrats, but the history has kind of bared out that he got to this point, and now, like I said, he's essentially in a neck and neck race, knocked out 16 really strong Republicans. So I would never underestimate him. At the end of the day,
Don't you wish that he was a little more disciplined and self controlled on the campaign trail? I mean, he's creating a lot of these problems for himself.
Certainly, and I think most people that are political minded like me, we always talk about being on message, and he doesn't have a filter sometimes. He's a very untraditional candidate. Part of that probably is because he doesn't necessarily have to, bow down to donors like other candidates in the past. There's always a risk that you're going to lose your donors. I think there was one of the stories this week that the Koch brothers are not going to give him any money for his campaign. Well, I would think that would be something that the Democrats would actually like, maybe, because the Koch brothers have been put up there as some sort of evil entity. The fact that he can go out there and say whatever's on his mind, even if it's a bit toxic or controversial, without having to, go back to his donors and apologize, I think that's kind of refreshing.
Well, Meg Whitman raised a lot of money for Mitt Romney, and she's working for Hillary Clinton this time around. She called Trump a demagogue and said she would support Clinton. Christine, I want your reaction as a Democrat to the problems Mr. Trump seems to be having over the past few days.
Well, it's I almost feel sorry for you, Jim, when Glenn picks on you like that with that big long list. But I was making more notes because I have more to add to it.
Chris, I'll get around to you.
I know he's going to get me next, so I'm not going to. But, I think that, Democrats are just watching this with their mouths open. I mean, it's outrageous, the things he's did. I was present in the room when Mr. Kahn's spoke about his son. And, the emotion in the room was amazing. We had such feeling for him. And for him to be then attacked by Donald Trump, it's almost incongruous. And the fact that he's not answerable to anyone is kind of scary to me. I've been thinking about this a great deal lately. He will not answer to anyone. You hear that Reince Priebus is apoplectic about what he's doing to the campaign. This Russian hacking, having the campaign in total turmoil, him not knowing that Putin was already in the Ukraine. I mean, some of the things he said, George Will wrote a funny column this morning, I don't know if you saw it, in the Washington Post, when he talked about how Trump is just someone who is, someone who is so shallow, and he cites Winston Churchill, and he said, he's talking about an adversary, and he said, he spoke without a note and almost without a point. And that's something that you can almost say about everything Donald Trump does, except you wonder, is there method to his madness? And it's very difficult to understand how anyone would control this man if he decided to go off on a tangent, if he's our president. And he won't listen to anyone. He won't listen to the Republican leaders. He won't listen to Congress. He probably won't listen to the Supreme Court. He'd just be off on his own. He won't listen to the military.
Chris,
I mean, Newt Gingrich said this morning, he doesn't know what he doesn't know, and he doesn't want to learn it.
Chris, let me interrupt you for a second. He is still drawing big crowds on the campaign trail, and he's got a message that's getting across to blue-collar workers, Jim Miller.
Yes, his message is resonating, and as a Republican, I have to go out there and defend, obviously tried my best to defend Donald Trump, but at the same time, I think, Chris and Democrats need to go out there and defend Hillary Clinton. We're talking about Donald Trump's words versus Hillary Clinton's actions, including having classified information on her server, which puts our national security at risk. Failing to take action in Benghazi when we had four Americans die, she takes contributions from foreign countries that have horrific records towards women. She's giving speeches with Goldman Sachs for $250,000 and on and on. We have the DNC scandal, finding out that the DNC essentially rigged their primary process for Hillary Clinton. So at the same time, I have to defend Donald Trump's words, the Democrats have to defend Hillary Clinton's actions.
And Chris,
The Democrats, I would just like to say, Glenn, it's really important that people understand, first of all, I just have to respond to this issue of security being breached. We've got a man who openly invited foreign nations to hack emails of one of the major political parties. Talk about someone who cares not about security and intervention of foreign nations. But, beyond that, this is a man who openly said on this morning, this weekend shows, that he did not know anything about what was in the platform of the Republican Party and didn't have anything to do with it, except we know for one element, which was the element that took away some of the restrictions on Putin and made it easier for him to operate in the Crimea. This is a big difference. This man is a danger to our country. When you talk about Hillary Clinton and the speech that she gave to our convention, she outlined for us the platform that upon which the Democrats and the progressives stand for. And this platform is something that serves the people of the 7th Congressional District and of Wisconsin on every single level.
Chris,
she didn't
Bremer,
hear anything about what Donald Trump will do for the people of this country,
Chris,
other than talking about himself. So I think you have to look at the platform, and I'm ready to talk about it, but to look at the platform and say, what is really the Democratic platform about? What is Hillary Clinton going to do for people in this nation, and there is a huge difference. And that is why she's bounced in the polls, because people heard that message.
Much of the turmoil on the campaign trail started with an address by Khizr Khan, a Muslim American at the Democratic National Convention, talking about his son, Army Captain Humayun Khan, who was awarded the Bronze Star and the Purple Heart after being killed in Iraq. There was also a grieving parent who spoke at the Republican National Convention, Patricia Smith, whose son Sean, a U.S. Foreign Service officer, was slain in Benghazi. I'm going to play both segments of those speeches and then come back to our analysts for reaction.
Hillary Clinton was right when she called my son the best of America. If it was up to Donald Trump, he never would have been in America. Donald Trump consistently smears the character of Muslims. He disrespects other minorities, women, judges, even his own party leadership. Let me ask you, have you even read the United States Constitution? I will gladly lend you my copy.
To this day, I don't even know why a computer guy like Sean was sent to Benghazi. That night, we lost sons, brothers, fathers, and husbands. We lost four brave Americans who made the ultimate sacrifice for the country they chose to serve, and the American people lost the truth. For all of this loss, for all of this grief, for all of the cynicism the tragedy in Benghazi has wrought upon America, I blame Hillary Clinton. I blame Hillary Clinton personally for the death of my son. That's personally. She lied to me and then called me a liar.
Chris Bremer Moogley, your reaction to those two speeches, particularly to those comments by Patricia Smith?
Well, I'm very sorry for Patricia Smith and for her loss. I mean, how can you not be sorry? And I know Secretary Clinton is very sorry. She was very close to the ambassador, and it was a horrible loss for her as well. But there is no place for demonizing our leaders when tragedy falls our nation. It's not right for Donald Trump to call Hillary Clinton the devil. It's not right for people to hold President Obama personally responsible for deaths when he is leading our country based on what he believes is necessary to protect our nation. So I don't think that's the right thing to do, and I'm sorry for her loss, but I'm sorry that it's misdirected sorrow at a personal attack on Hillary Clinton. She suffers probably more than any of us even know. With regard to, in addition to the parents, I mean, obviously the parents suffer more, but Hillary Clinton also suffers for that loss.
Let me get Jim Miller's. Chris, let me get Jim Miller's response. Jim, your response to what you just heard?
If you want to go ahead, Glenn, I'll stop.
Yeah, Jim Miller?
Well, I remember being on the floor and watching Ms. Smith speak, and I think both of them were really just, they're uncomfortable, and maybe it's a shame on both parties. I'll call both parties out for putting these parents up there that are grieving and kind of trying to capitalize on their loss for political points. I can look at this as a person who's a Republican. I think both parties are kind of guilty in this effect that they really, it just created a bad situation or a bad moment, so...
We are.
I agree with you, Jim. But I just, Glenn, if it's all right, I'd just like to say, the Benghazi thing has been, there has been nothing against Hillary with Benghazi in terms of the 9 investigations. When Mr. Khan got up, he was talking about a platform that will ban Muslims. That is part of the Republican convention platform. And I think that there's a big difference in terms of why Mr. Khan was there to address that issue, as opposed to bringing back Benghazi as a personal attack on Hillary Clinton.
If I can jump in, there's no part of our platform that says we're going to ban Muslims. There was a conversation of how are we going to vet refugees in this time of, I would say, a crisis. We've got attacks in Nice. We've got tax in Orlando. We've got a tax almost on a weekly basis. You know, I think this is kind of a lie that's been perpetrated by the Democrats, saying that Republicans are anti-Muslim and want to ban Muslims. It's just not the case.
Well, I think we listen to the words of your candidate who actually says he wants to ban Muslims. I don't think that's hard to figure out.
We're going to take a quick break here. We're talking to Christine Bremer-Moogley, superdelegate to the Democratic Party Convention in Philadelphia, Jim Miller, delegate to the Republican Party National Convention in Cleveland. I'm Glenn Moberg. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back with more after this.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum, Hotel Red, and Visit Milwaukee. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Details at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from the Wausau River District, presenting First Thursdays, a social retail event held the first Thursday of each month, with shopping, activities, and music by local musicians throughout downtown Wausau. WausauRiverDistrict.com.
Every Friday, we discuss and debate the top political news each week with two guests from different perspectives during our Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll join in with your questions and views, too, on the issues that matter most to you during the Week in Review, Friday mornings at 8, rebroadcast Friday nights at 9, here on the Ideas Network.
It used to be Andy and Barney Fife. Now it's Howard Stern and a brothel life. Too much crap to drive the world insane. Everybody singing the jailhouse blues. Don't believe a word of the evening news. What happened? Does anybody know? What happened? Where did America go?
That's Merle Haggard taking us into the next segment of Route 51 as we talk about the political conventions in the November elections with Christine Bremer-Moogley, superdelegate to the Democratic Party Convention in Philadelphia, and Jim Miller, delegate to the Republican Party National Convention in Cleveland. I'm Glenn Moberg. Let's go to the phones right now, 1-800-780-9742. Here is Tony in Tomahawk. Tony, you're on Route 51.
Good morning. Thanks for a good discussion. An observation about the press. I'm still waiting for people when whatever side makes an assertion to just ask a simple question: is it true, and what's the evidence? I don't hear anybody in journalism saying that. Some years ago in Spain, when the government was lying to the people, the Spanish journalists put their cameras and microphones down and turned their back. Donald Trump has banned journalists from his rallies. We've had people, you know, arrested or held by the cops down in Waukesha. Banned the Washington Post, banned Telemundo, several other organizations. So I'm waiting for journalists to step up and show some courage, ask the tough question, is it true, what's the evidence, and not to cover the man if he's going to ban other journalists. That's just outrageous.
Tony,
I'm still waiting, Glenn, for somebody to do an ad with Donald with all his tweeting, maybe the Jackson 5 Rockin' Robin, you know, tweet, tweet, tweedly-deet. Is he tweeting Donald? And that seems to be his whole way of communicating complex issues.
Tony, we got it. And you raised an important concern. I want to bring it up, too. He has banned reporters from the Washington Post. He's also banned reporters from the Des Moines Register, Politico, Univision, the Huffington Post. Jim Miller, as a reporter, I find this deeply disturbing, and I'd like to get a precedent from you. When has this happened in an American political contest before? Not in Germany, not in Russia, but in America.
Yeah, I'm not aware of it, but there's certainly a plethora of press out there. We saw them on display at convention. It's interesting, though, that if we talk about the low poll numbers of Congress, but the press, by and large, doesn't have much better approval ratings. And there's certainly good press members out there. I know many of them that are they're good reporters. But to say you're a journalist, that's a pretty wide swat. And we saw that at the convention. We saw a lot of people just with microphones and cameras and throwing their camera in your face. And they're out there looking for a story. They had their story wrote, and they were trying to find people to support their story. And so there's really an integrity issue there. And if they report something, you know, God bless that we have free press, but they really don't have any accountability for what they write a lot of times.
With all due respect, the reporters who are being excluded are not just bloggers. You're talking about the Washington Post, the Des Moines Register, and once again, as somebody who makes a living in journalism, I find that very disturbing.
Can I respond, Glenn? I think that this is just another issue of Trump, who should probably follow the advice of Mr. Kahn and read the Constitution. I got a couple copies in my office, too, we can send in. You know, the fact is that the First Amendment is the foundation, the rock upon which we rely for democracy to be meaningful in this country. And, you know, when we've got a man who makes stupefying statements to the press and then just keeps talking so that they don't even have the chance to follow up, it's one misstatement after the next. Even a reporter like, if you watch George Stephanopoulos this weekend, he couldn't handle him. And he's a great interviewer. You know, it is he just makes these ridiculous comments, and it winds up just like Tony said, you don't get the chance, the press doesn't really get the chance to say, wait a minute, that's not true, because he never stops talking. I think it's really true that when you've got a guy who bans the Washington Post, and then yet he went to Washington Post to give his interview, to give a statement that he's not going to endorse Paul Ryan, and then he backs off it when everybody goes nuts about it. But he's told the Washington Post that 2 days ago, the Washington Post, who he banned, he went to them, and he gave them the statement that he is not going to support Paul Ryan. He just wasn't ready yet because he was playing tit-for-tat with Paul Ryan.
All right, Chris.
This man is not, he's temperamentally not suited to be president.
Chris, I got it. And Jim Miller, I will agree with you that there are people in my profession who lack integrity. We're going to play another clip from both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump's acceptance speeches. I don't know how many of these I'm going to get to because the conversation is so good, but I want to get to this one. Let's look at foreign policy. Since our last clip started with the Democrats, this one will start with Donald Trump talking about what he called a problem of judgment with Hillary Clinton.
After 4 years of Hillary Clinton, what do we have? ISIS has spread across the region and the entire world. Libya is in ruins, and our ambassador and his staff were left helpless to die at the hands of savage killers. Egypt was turned over to the radical Muslim Brotherhood, forcing the military to retake control. Iraq is in chaos. Iran is on the path to nuclear weapons. Syria is engulfed in a civil war, and a refugee crisis now threatens the West. After 15 years of wars in the Middle East, after trillions of dollars spent and thousands of lives lost, the situation is worse than it has ever been before. This is the legacy of Hillary Clinton. Death, destruction, terrorism, and weakness.
You really think Donald Trump has the temperament to be commander-in-chief? Donald Trump can't even handle the rough and tumble of a presidential campaign. He loses his cool at the slightest provocation. When he's gotten a tough question from a reporter, when he's challenged in a debate, when he sees a protester at a rally, imagine, if you dare, imagine him in the Oval Office facing a real crisis. A man you can bait with a tweet is not a man we can trust with nuclear weapons.
And that is Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump at their respective conventions. I want to get a take on these attacks on each other as being not suitable to be commander-in-chief. Jim Miller, let's start with you. Is Donald Trump too emotionally unstable to be trusted with nuclear weapons? Joe Scarborough says he asked a foreign policy advisor, Trump did three times, why he couldn't use nuclear weapons if the United States has them. That is something that his campaign manager, Paul Manafort, has denied.
Well, I think this is the talking point of the left to go after Donald Trump, saying that things like he's a racist or sexist or personal attacks about some of the comments he says. But if you look at what Donald Trump said, he basically laid out the reality of the world. So I agree with him on every point in that clip that you said, and I think the voters do as well, and that's why he's got to where he has in the polls. And you talk to people on the streets, if you peel away the facade and the attacks and a little nitpicking, people say, yeah, you know, if you really think about it, I agree with them on this. I agree with them on that. He's right on this issue. And so that's why he's resonating with voters.
Now, it's not just the opinion of liberals. Billionaire Mike Bloomberg, who was a Republican, he said he was endorsing...
Not a Republican.
Well, he said he's endorsing Clinton because she was sane. Billionaire Mark Cuban called him crazy. Stephen Hayes of the conservative Weekly Standard wrote, and this is a quote, "Donald Trump is not of sound mind." David Brooks of the New York Times called him a morally untethered, spiritually vacuous man who appears haunted by multiple personality disorders. Mitt Romney's chief strategist, Stuart Stevens, wrote, and this is another quote, "Donald Trump is not a well man." And the guy who ghostwrote his autobiography, Tony Schwartz, said, "If Trump gets the nuclear codes, there's an excellent possibility it will lead to the end of civilization." I've never heard a candidate facing criticism like that from members of his own party.
Well, he's unconventional, no doubt about it. He's like no other candidate we've ever seen. But by contrast, I think the American people are sick of canned politicians that are focus group tested and scripted. And you could take any of the other candidates out there, put them up there with a teleprompter, and they're going to give you the same message. He's different in that regard, and that's the appeal of Donald Trump.
Well, Christine Bremer-Moogley, that long list of Donald Trump, that litany of things that have gone wrong since Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State, the world in turmoil. Republicans like Jim Miller say that's evidence she can't be trusted either as Secretary of State or as president.
You know, the dark message that came out of the Republican convention to say America was not great and that that our country was falling behind and that our foreign policy was horrific is just a dark, terrible message that the American people are rejecting. You could see that at the Democratic convention, the people that were there, Republicans and Democrats, obviously, support what Hillary Clinton stands for and support the fact that she stands for strengthening Europe. She doesn't stand for tearing our borders apart and ruining our relationships with our neighbors in Mexico and to the north. She doesn't believe that we should weaken our commitment to NATO and destabilize Europe. What Donald Trump stands for is total destabilization of the world. I think when you hear the comments, and I heard that also, what you cited, Glenn, about him asking three times, if we have nukes, why don't we use them? That's terrifying. You know, it's way worse than what Barry Goldwater said when we were thinking about when he was running against President Johnson. It's frightening. This is a man with no moral compass, as people that know him have said, and we cannot risk him being in the White House.
Jim Miller, are the Democrats trying to do to Donald Trump what Lyndon Johnson did to Barry Goldwater with that infamous Daisy ad back in 1964 by making him look unsuitable?
Possibly. I think there's probably some old tricks in there. But Christine touched on this topic that our convention was dark. You know, we just came out off the tragedies of Nice and the shootings in Dallas and the shooting in Orlando, and the Democrats all of a sudden are trying to tell us that the world is a great place when the reality of it is that people don't think that we're safe out there. They don't think the economy is really clicking. And there's a bit of a doublespeak as well, because it was just, I think, 8 years ago that First Lady Michelle Obama said that for the first time ever she felt proud of her country. Well, it's a very similar thing that they're criticizing Trump for saying now. So it's a bit of it's political doublespeak.
If Donald Trump is making mistakes, so according to some, Christine, is Hillary Clinton, telling Fox News over the weekend that FBI Director James Comey, quote, said, "My answers were truthful and what I've said is consistent with what I have told the American people." The Washington Post gave her four Pinocchios for that statement. It's the worst rating possible. Isn't this playing into the public perception that she's not trustworthy?
Well, I think that, yeah, I think it's a problem that when the Washington Post gives someone four Pinocchios, it's another reading of the press onto what she said and an interpretation of what she said. I think what she was trying to say was that there were no charges brought against her. There was no evidence that she did anything to purposely violate national security. And what she did was very similar to what almost all the State Department people did in those days. If you would question this, and if the press had looked into this a little stronger, they would have seen that almost all the top people at the State Department had their own server. she was getting private emails from other members of the State Department because they did not rely on the technology at the State Department at the time. So, you know, it's unfortunate. But, you know, when we talk about this issue of darkness, we came away from that convention not saying that America will be great again, but acknowledging that America is great. And we heard it from the podium over and over it again. And what Hillary's message to us was, don't let anyone say to you, I alone can fix it. Our message was, we are all together. We are stronger together. Trump came back with a message, it's dark and gloomy. I'm the only one in the country that can fix this. I alone know how to fix it. I mean, it's playing into the total playbook of a demagogue. And how can you come away from that not knowing it? I watched the Republican convention. I forced myself. And I watched the whole thing just as you probably felt about watching ours, Jim. And I watched Trump, and I was so depressed when I watched him. I thought, how could this man possibly be followed by anyone?
Jim
and
Miller.
I think when you hear now that this week in Green Bay, Paul Ryan, Ron Johnson, and Governor Walker are not going to that rally. You know that the Republicans themselves cannot tolerate the message that this man is bringing forward.
Jim Miller, your response, please.
Well, I, again, they get caught up on mincing words. The I alone comment, I believe it's between the contrast is between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And of those two, Donald Trump is the person that can fix the problems. It's interesting that it was brought up that there might be some disconnect among Republicans, but if you look at the numbers, back in the primary, Bernie Sanders won 71 of 72 counties in Wisconsin. He won heavily up north. He won heavily everywhere. Yet there's 22 Democrat superdelegates, including Chris. Only three of those voted for Sanders at the convention. So now the Democrats have to do this big shift. They really wanted Sanders, but they got Clinton, so now they're going to have to try to defend her, just as I suppose many Republicans are having to do with Donald Trump. So it's an interesting dynamic that we're going through right now.
Well, that's just not true. We're not the first of all. That's not that many superdelegates. There are only four that are elected that were there, and the rest of them serve as our congressional delegation. So there aren't that many superdelegates. The superdelegates that did vote for Hillary Clinton, including myself, I had committed to Hillary Clinton a year before Bernie Sanders was even starting to race, and I stood by my commitment, and I'm happy that I did. And with regard to the Democrats, our platform was one that we worked together on, that Bernie Sanders came to our delegation, our Wisconsin delegation breakfast, and told our delegates, including those who were for Bernie Sanders, and that was many of them, the majority of them, that they should support this platform and they should support Hillary Clinton and they should do everything they can to defeat Donald Trump. It is not hard at all for us to come behind this platform. This platform recognizes the things that the people of the 7th Congressional District really believe in, you know, minimum wage being raised to $15 an hour, making certain that health care option for universal health care is available to all, making certain that there is, you know, a paid family leave, making certain that our students can go to a public university and have no tuition and refinance their debt. These are things that Donald Trump is not in favor of. And
Jim
these
Miller,
are the things that people
Jim Miller, your
district.
Response, please.
And I've been practicing law for 35 years.
Chris,
and I can tell you, I know.
Chris, you got to give Jim a chance to speak. Jim Miller?
Well, I don't think that the Republican platform has changed at all now that Donald Trump is our nominee. We still believe in economic freedom and individual liberties versus a big government top-down approach. That's always been our platform, and it is still now, even though Donald Trump has the liberties of being able to throw out other ideas and think outside the box. And some of these are just ideas, but we do have separations of power. Even though our president likes to use executive orders, we do have separation of power. So we do still have the House and the Senate and the judiciary. So we're not electing a King Trump or a King or a Queen Clinton. We're electing a president who's just one branch of government.
I'm Glenn Moberg. We're talking to Jim Miller, Republican delegate to the National Convention in Cleveland, and Christine Bremer-Moogley, superdelegate to the Democratic Party Convention in Philadelphia. We'll be back after this.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like Nutsy Mutts and Crazy Cats and the Mabel Tainter Theater play a huge role in the success of WPR. Your business can, too. Details at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from the Medical College of Wisconsin, Central Wisconsin Campus, the first medical school in Central Wisconsin, helping to ensure Wisconsinites have access to health care for generations to come.
You're listening to the Rolling Stones recording at a Donald Trump rally this past spring in Rothschild, taking us into our final segment as we talk about the political conventions with Christine Bremer-Moogley, superdelegate to the Democratic Party Convention in Philadelphia, and Jim Miller, delegate to the Republican Party National Convention in Cleveland. I'm Glenn Moberg. Let's talk about something that is important to both parties, and that's Supreme Court nominees. Jim Miller, this is really the crux of a lot of concerns on both sides.
Absolutely, yeah. As you know, whoever the next president is going to have the opportunity to pick several Supreme Court justices and their lifetime appointments. And the court is kind of in balance at this point. And we just talked about the different separations of powers and the co-equal branches. It's going to have a big influence on who we get in office in the White House this year.
Chris Bremer, Hillary Clinton says she wants to repeal Citizens United or at least have the court revisit that. Is that a realistic possibility?
Well, what Hillary Clinton says is that we need a constitutional amendment to make certain that this cannot be the law of our land, which the majority of the people in this country are against Citizens United and allowing corporate interests to have such undue influence on our elections. You know, as President Obama said at our convention, the American people aren't a people that want to be ruled. We are a people of government. And that's why Donald Trump's statement, I alone can do it, is so important in this context. You know, the Supreme Court is crucial to our liberty. And I was fortunate enough to hear Hillary Clinton give a major address on the Supreme Court here in Madison a couple months ago. And she outlined how important the Supreme Court has been to our lives and our liberty in this country. And when you consider what's at stake here with regard to the future of our country, with regard to the rights of our citizens, as we move forward and what issues can come forward to our court and what do come forward to our court and how they govern our lives, this is really, really important. You know, we want to make certain that a woman's right is safe, to a safe and legal abortion is protected, that billionaires' influence is curbed in our elections, you know, that the liberty, the principles of equality are protected for all of us, and that's the Supreme Court. And so it is very, very important that everyone recognize that this election is crucial because of the age of some of the members of our court and the fact that there will be changes, and this next president will have an opportunity to affect the court for a generation. And
Jim
so
Miller,
we really need to know that the person that's making these decisions isn't making them on the basis of some, you know, outlandish, you know, we know how Donald Trump feels about judges, how he felt that a judge with a Mexican heritage, even though he was an American, would not be fair. How else is he going to make his judgment?
Jim Miller, what problems do conservatives have with Merrick Garland's qualifications for the Supreme Court, Mr. Obama's choice?
Oh, I, you're asking the wrong person, I guess, on that one. I haven't really dove into the weeds. But I would like to go back, if we could, to the Citizens United, because I know that's a real hot topic. And certainly the influence of money in politics has always been an issue. But, you know, Democrats are going out there saying we want to overturn Citizens United, but they always want to do it after they use Citizens United to get elected. Obviously, we've seen Hillary Clinton go out and get gobs of campaign contributions from companies like Goldman Sachs. We've seen Russ Feingold, for instance, creating PACs, even though he was against PACs in the past. So it's a bit of hypocrisy for the liberals to go out there and say they want to overturn Citizens United, but only after they win the next election by using all this influx of money
The reason is because Democrats aren't stupid about it. You know, obviously, if they don't do and aren't on the same playing field as the Republicans, who are gladly taking money from billionaires, we would be unilaterally disarming. And how would we possibly win? Russ Feingold recognizes that. What's important is to win so that these laws can be undone. Russ Feingold is a champion, absolute champion of campaign finance reform. It's the first thing he did when he was elected. So don't use his name in vain in that regard.
But Bernie Sanders was a different type of candidate, and like I said, he won 71 of 72 counties, and Christine, you know, voted for, even though she wasn't bound, she ended up voting for Clinton. Sanders was a different type of candidate who wasn't taking the gobs of corporate money like Clinton is doing.
All right, I'm going to ask one final question of both of you. We're out of time, and I want as close to a one-word answer from you as I can get. Whoever gets elected will have big negative numbers with about half the electorate. How will they be able to govern, and will the winner end up being a one-term president? Jim Miller, we'll start with you.
It might be a dirty word in politics, but I think compromise. There's going to have to be some compromise.
Christine?
It's not a dirty word. It's the word that is the basis of our democracy, and compromise is important, and I agree with you. We need to form consensus and compromise.
All right. I want to thank both of you for being with us. It's been a very spirited and, I think, a very informative hour.
Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn.
We want to thank today's guests, Wausau Attorney Christine Bremer-Moogley, who served as superdelegate to the Democratic Party Convention in Philadelphia, and 7th Congressional District Republican Party Chair Jim Miller of Hayward, who served as a delegate to the Republican Convention in Cleveland. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Janice Schleiss. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Merle Haggard, the Rolling Stones, recorded at a Donald Trump rally in Rothschild, and Neil Young, recorded at a Bernie Sanders rally in Wausau. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.